Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Krang, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kale Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on LinkedIn.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 509, being recorded on the 4th of December, 2024, with special guest Tiago Almeida. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, we have, of course, our special guest, Tiago, and we have all of our co-hosts, pretty much almost a full,
full house
of co-hosts. Yeah. Happy to see Cynthia here back again, and Russell, Evan, Kale, and myself, Sujit. So, we're going to cover a few news items, I think. Russell, you had some news to cover today, or we're all clear on the news since we did the big Ignite episode, just only recently.
Yeah, nothing new from me. I did check to see if there was anything new in the last day, but I couldn't find much that was interesting.
Great. And Cynthia, I saw your LinkedIn post about your MBA presentation. And is that done, or are you still working on that?
No, it's tonight.
Tonight, right? Yeah. Well, best of luck for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
She's doing this as the way to de-stress.
That's right. I was wondering. I'm surprised.
It would be nice to talk about Azure and not think about my pitch for a little bit.
I was surprised to see you one. I was like, shouldn't she be prepping for tonight? But okay. Get your mind off it. It's fine. All right. Yeah. So in this case, let's move on to our special guest, Tiago. Tiago, thank you so much for joining us. Tiago used to be, Tiago and I used to be in the same division at Microsoft recently, and then he defected into other areas of Microsoft.
So,
Tiago, thanks so much for joining. Please introduce yourself. Tell us kind of what you do at Microsoft, what your passion is, and we'll sort of take it from there.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Sujit, and everyone else for hosting me here. I'm Tiago Almeida. I'm currently a PM on the Azure Functions team and have been on this team for about 3 years now. Before then, I was, as Sujit mentioned, in the what is now the industry solutions team, working hands-on with customers on multiple projects. And very early on, when I joined Microsoft, I was in the evangelism team, the developer evangelism team. So have a variety of different areas inside of Microsoft that I worked through, but eventually joined the PM team to basically, I brought so much feedback to the functions team that I ended up joining the team.
It was easier to hire you than to continue to listening to you.
Now you can fix it all. And for the past basically almost a year and a half or two, I've been working towards something that we announced at GA at Ignite, the Flex Consumption Hosting Plan, which we can go into more detail during the podcast if we want to. But that's where I am, yeah.
Yeah. I remember you used to do a lot of work with functions, with serverless computing and what was known as CSC at the time. So happy to see you pursuing your passion there. So, certainly functions, we've kind of talked about it on the podcast a few times. And of course, it's serverless computing is always a hot topic. I want to just understand from your perspective, from the product group perspective, what do you see in terms of the trajectory of serverless and functions, especially these days when there are so many compute options at Microsoft, right? We've got now ACA, we've got Kubernetes, we've got app service plans, and then we've got functions. So there's all these compute to sort of options that we have, and just curious, what's our story for functions here? But of course, we're going to dive into some of the details, like you talked about.
Yeah, on the way I think about it, the functions itself, it's both a programming model and also the service options where you can host that, the solutions that you write with that programming model. And the approach that functions has taken is We have a serverless queues like consumption and fast consumption. And then we have more dedicated queues like the Elastic Premium or the App Service Plans. And we've recently also introduced Azure Container App support for functions. So it's basically taking that programming model and writing the function exactly the same and just choosing which best hosting plan you have for it. And that's why we're expanding, you know, the hosting plans to allow for functions runtime to run across any of those hosting plans, and then the customer can decide which hosting plan they want. So if you want to bring your own container and just have the functions runtime inside of it, then the container apps is a good solution, and where you can have an environment with multiple other containers that solutions that might not necessarily need the function runtime, and they could share the same environment, share the same networking, scaling, and all those. But if you want just purely serverless and you want it to scale to zero, scale to 1,000 very quickly, and etc., then flex consumption is the destination that we're going to get customers going forward. But if you prefer to have access to a really large instance size, and you want to share multiple both functions and web apps together, then that's where the app service plan, hosting plan, or even the premium plan start to make more sense. And that is also more predictable, right? You're paying for those servers. They're fully yours. You can decide how many apps you put in them, and you know exactly how much you're going to pay for that month for those instances.
Tiago, you mentioned programming model a couple times while you were describing it. Can you tell us from the developer's perspective, when they're developing, what are some of the things they already have in mind, or what are some of their consideration before they start looking at the hosting options?
Yeah, so when I say programming model, it's basically a framework that we have with triggers and bindings that the developer can take advantage of. So they don't have to write all the code to respond to events. So basically, it's an event-driven, basically the key thing is event-driven solutions that you use Azure Functions for. And if you have messages going into a queue, events going into event hubs, notification coming through Event Grid, or even HTTP requests in our minds, those are all events that then will trigger your function to execute. Then we have, as part of the programming model, we have the built-in triggers that are pretty easy to create a function with that trigger definition to say, I want this function to execute when that event happened. So, you know, an HTTP messenger was put into Service Bus or all of the other triggers that we have. We also have bindings. So basically, there's the trigger, but as the trigger happens, you might want to go fetch something from a different source. So for example, you have an HTTP trigger that has an ID on it, and you want to pick up a document from Cosmos DB, for example, you can use an input binding to pick up that document based on the ID of the HTTP request. And then we also have output bindings. So if you want to write out to, say, a queue, you don't have to put in the whole code, use the SDKs to write the sending to that queue. You basically just use the output binding, and it'll take care of sending it to that queue for you.
So does that mean, Tiago, that, you know, with the work that y'all are doing with flex consumption, you know, and the conversation around your, you know, when you're picking functions, you're sort of picking a, you know, a design model, right, or a development model, that with the flex consumption, you're really splitting those two things almost entirely, where if I'm sort of the developer and I like, you know, the trigger-based model and whatnot that function goes, I don't even have to know or care how whoever owns the infrastructure piece is going to deploy it. It's just going to run for me. It's going to work the way that I want. And the same for the infrastructure people. They don't really care what I'm doing with it as long as they know it's a functions runtime. Is that sort of the Uber intent at the end of the day, is to allow that separation of decisions?
That's a good way to put it, I guess, is the developer can write it, and then there's a decision that to be made of the hosting plan. But while they're writing the function, they don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say, you know, going forward, if you don't know which hosting plan to pick, then Flex Consumption is the one to pick. Not because I worked on it, but because it does, but because it does cover the majority of the requirements that customers have, right, with scaling and networking and et cetera. But you might, you know, you do have a lot of customers that prefer or would benefit from the other hosting plan. So we like to have those as options as well. And we we plan to work more on making it clearer to customers which one to pick. So we want to provide some more guidance there going forward.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I think Functions has always been a really appealing design model, but it didn't necessarily work for everybody from a deployment model, right? Now you, by breaking these apart, you're giving those flexibility. No, that's great.
Yeah, one question I had was on the Flex Consumption, you pick things like, you know, I think you're kind of build based on memory and compute and things. How does this fit in with the whole ecosystem, and how do people like figure out like where they should set that at, or how where they should set their memory at so they're not wasting money or whatnot, you know?
Right. Yeah, that is a good question. Basically, in Flex Consumption, when you create the app, you have to choose the instance size. You can change that after the app exists, but there's two key things to do. Is one is the instance size, which is the amount of memory available for each instance, and then the concurrency of the app as well, where each instance should be able to handle only a certain number of requests in parallel. But this concurrency is it's a key differentiator and a great feature that we have, so that you can take advantage of that whole instance, you know. And we start with some smart defaults, but you can change that, and you can better take advantage of the instance size by increasing the concurrency if you notice that the instance is not being fully utilized. We currently have a 2 gig and a 4 gig instance size. We're coming out with a half a gig one, and that will be one where, you know, lower concurrency, but let it scale out more will become very important. We have currently a tool. It only works with HTTP, but it's an integration that we have with Azure Load Testing. It is called the Throughput Optimizer, or Performance Optimizer. So if you open a Flex Consumption app in the portal and you go under the Performance tab, it will have Performance Optimizer there. And it lets you pick and choose multiple instance sizes and concurrencies, and it'll run and then configure a load test, and it'll run a load test for each one of those, and at the end give you the throughput, the latency, and all of those for each one of those runs to help you identify it. But in the road on the roadmap, we have some thoughts about observing how your app is doing, showing you the amount of memory and CPU percentage and all of that on average that your app is using, and then you help you decide if you overestimated the amount of memory that I needed. I don't need that much, so I'll scale it down and still handle the business that I need to handle with this function app, but pay less for it in the long run.
Okay, so I don't know. I wonder, like, how is like pricing handled in these scenarios? Or is it like based on I picked so much of memory and CPU scale and multiply that by the number of requests that I have put in? Explain to me how that works.
Yeah. So the pricing for Flex Consumption, it's basically based on the time when your function app is active or your instances are actively executing your functions. And then there's basically two meters. One is active time in GB per second, and the other one is the number of executions. So, if you have 1 million executions, you would pay 40 cents. Or if you have 2 seconds of active time on one instance, and that instance is two GBs, then you're paying for 4 GB seconds. And the cool thing is, it doesn't matter if that instance is processing 10 requests at the same time, or 50, or 1. It's only based on the instance size, so 2 gigs, for the amount of time that it's active. If there's gaps in between where it's not active, or if that instance is not executing your functions anymore, then you're not paying anything for it.
Okay.
But the app will scale based on concurrency. So if you have a set concurrency of 10, and you get 20 requests, there will be 2 instances, you know, in parallel executing. So the those two will be paid for.
Okay, got it. And in terms of, are there going to be any restrictions in terms of doing things like orchestrated functions, I think? Is that what it's called? Like where you can, one function can kind of do like a long running function or a long running set of steps, durable functions. Yeah. So is that all sort of allowed and included, or is there a different sort of pricing that comes into play there?
No, durable functions still, you can run it on multiple hosting plans. It's still part of that programming model. I should have probably called that out before with Cynthia's question, as durable functions is still a part of the whole functions programming model, and you can host it on any of the hosting plans, and it definitely works well on flex consumption as well. We actually at Ignite, during one of the sessions, we did a demo that included a durable functions, and basically the scenario was we had a lot of data that we needed to ingest into PostgreSQL. So the file was uploaded through one HTTP requested function. It saved that file into blob storage, and then EventGrid triggered an orchestration to then process that file. And what it did is the orchestration broke it into multiple smaller chunks of that CSV file and then gave it to an activity function inside the durable function. So each of those activity functions did a parallel insert into PostgreSQL, and it ingested that file quite quickly into PostgreSQL.
So really to take advantage of the flex consumption as well as the functions programming model, I mean, for most people, we'll have to sort of reimagine how you write this application, right? Using some of the techniques, especially to take the most out of it, using things like durable functions, activities, triggers, bindings, right? Honestly, you have to think of everything to sort of take most advantage. Because I know there are some people that just will make a decision to use functions just because they don't need the CPU all the time, right? You have a call, you have something that's invoked maybe a few times a day, and you just, you make a kind of, you can just throw that into a function. But really, you want to look at it, I think, you want to look at it from an overall application perspective. See, how can I fully take advantage of this, right? I'm going to have this flex consumption plan here, right? What can I stuff in there to make the most of it, right?
Yeah, we've definitely seen customers that go through a maturity progression with taking advantage of Azure Functions. You can start with just having a trigger and doing everything else yourself with code, not taking advantage of bindings or changing any of the defaults for scaling or concurrency. But then as their solution progresses, they realize that they can reduce their own code, take advantage of bindings. And then if they realize that they're doing orchestrations by hand, by putting a message into a queue, having another function that triggers from the queue that puts it into two more queues, and then more comes out of that, then they find out that a durable function makes a lot of sense for that solution, where it'll still use queues or whatever backend that was chosen for the function app, but in the code of your app, you don't need to worry about those. All you're calling an activity in parallel or in sequence, to make a workflow out of it. And or durable functions itself is taking care of the orchestration behind the scenes between all of those, which is quite the powerful feature of durable functions.
Has there been any sort of improvements in terms of the, I guess, the cold start or the first start, right? I mean, typically with these things, you don't have dedicated, service running or a server running, and there's always that initial first request before, and warm things up. Right. Like, how has that improved over time?
Yeah, well, for the consumption plan in the past 2 years, we have been focusing quite a lot on improving the cold start for across all languages. And we wrote a blog post in a few months back. I can share with you later that covers some of the detail and the improvement there. But it did reduce over 50-something% the cold start from what we had before. We run, I want to say, I think it's around 78,000 cold start checks every day. So we basically have function apps deployed in all regions with each of the languages, And then we do a cold start, multiple cold start checks against each one of those apps per day, so that we know if we never want to regress. So if there's any features coming out, we'll catch that regression on cold start pretty early in the early stages of the deployment. And then we stop it. We address what the issue was, and so that there's no cold start. So we definitely done a lot of work there, but there's still cold start, right? You know, milliseconds there, or half a second of cold start. And if you want to completely mitigate it, in the Flex consumption app, we introduced always ready instances as an optional feature. It's kind of like the always ready feature that you have in the premium plan, but in the premium, you have to always have one always running the whole month. So it's not really scaled to zero. But on Flex, you can optionally choose a number of always ready instances. And when they're not executing, when they're not active, the price is much lower than when it's executing. So you're still paying for that cold start mitigation to be close to zero, but it's not like you're paying for it to be fully executing the whole month, which is a good compromise, I think, in the future.
Tiago, you mentioned earlier that y'all are working on some capabilities to make it easier for customers to sort of pick and choose which development one or which runtime model they want to use, or maybe infrastructure model they want to use. Part of that is, like you were just talking about, the cold start, and there is a cost. It's non-zero, but it's not as expensive as if you kept it running. You know, at least for me, when I think about functions, my head starts to hurt as I try and figure out what is it actually going to cost me, because I may not actually know my, you know, what my use case is, or I'm sorry, right, what my request rate is. Is that what you're talking about when you're talking about building tooling and guidance in terms of picking one, or is there some other mechanism for me to take a stab at figuring this out?
I meant it more from a guidance perspective as to what features do you need, and then this is the right hosting plan for you. We started it. We already done it. If you go and create an Azure Function app right now on the portal, you will see now the first thing that shows up is a table with the hosting plan choices, and Flex consumption is the default selected now. But it has in the table, it has a few rows just to inform you. If you need no cold start, these are the ones that support it. If you need to bring your own container, this is the one.
Right.
So it's that.
And does that include some estimate of sort of the cost, so that I'm not trying to, like, because I'm not trying to have the calculator on one window and looking at the different hosting plans trying to figure that out?
Not on that table. We did consider what we have there is the type of billing, I guess, is either serverless or dedicated, but it's very high level, right? That table is just a quick view. It's a good question we've pondered over time as to how to make it.
So I'm not the only one that it hurts. Easier. It hurts my head a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We have some in the documentation. We have some notes about how to estimate for the consumption and Flex consumption plan. For the more dedicated plans, it's a little easier because you just know you're going to have
at that point
that number. The Elastic Premium plan is an interesting one because you do have a number of dedicated, but then beyond that, it still elastically scales out and in. Then that scaling is something that you will basically have to either load test or monitor over time to see how many instances it ended up using for.
And in fairness to y'all as a functions team, you're not the only service that has this problem, right? It's sort of an inherent problem of the pay-as-you-go model, right? If you don't know, you don't know. So, okay, cool. No, but at least you're thinking about it, which is great.
Yeah. In Flex, it's interesting because we made concurrency of like first party thing that needs to be configured even for HTTP. So all the HTTP and non-HTTP triggers, there is a concurrency setting. You know, there's some that don't like the timer trigger because it only happens in one instance at a time anyway. But for the messaging triggers and HTTP, that concurrency is exactly what dictates how the app scales. So if you know what your request rate is at any given time, or how it's going to vary over time, you will be able to estimate how many instances and how many seconds they would be active for. It's still not a strict, you know, way to do it, but it helps you estimate it. And We put some examples in the documentation, but I think over time we should be able to build some tooling to help there to maybe analyze the past week of executions and data to see how it scaled and what the price was for them. Another thing that I've done is we have 5 meters. There's 3 for the always ready that I called out before, the one that helps with cold start and et cetera. And there's 2 for on demand. And if you go to the metrics, the Azure Monitor metrics, it will show you how much of it was used during that time.
Oh, so you can go back and sort of look. Yeah. See. Okay.
You can use that to say, oh, this run for this amount of time with this, it cost me exactly $3 or $5 or 10 cents. Yeah.
I like the 10 cents one. That was right up my price point.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about how these days AI is obviously the rage, right? OpenAI especially, and people think about GPUs a lot these days. Only in our last show, we talked about, I think it's serverless GPUs is another feature that was, I think was launched around Ignite. And they talked about that in reference to Azure Container Apps. I'm just kind of curious, does that also apply to flex consumption functions, or how does that work?
No, so in that session that we had at Ignite, the one that I talked about, the PostgreSQL, the second part of that session was with the Azure Container Apps team. So it was a shared session between the functions and Container Apps team. And then the Container Apps team took that data and put it through a custom model that they were hosting in the Azure Container Apps GPUs to make sense of the data and allow customers to interact with it and have a conversation about the data. And we thought that was a good way to show that it's a platform, between app service, container apps, and function apps. They have some good reasons for the customer to choose those for the right feature. This is not to say that you won't be able to then just run function apps on container apps, so the function programming model on container apps in GPU if you want to. But the GPU support was put in container apps because of that, it's specialized for this area.
Got it. You can still use the same programming model across both, but you'll have you have to put your kind of inferencing code in container apps, and then all of your other reacting code or event-driven code, you could kind of put that more in functions.
Right. Yeah, because the functions, the flex at least, the concurrency-based scaling and et cetera, it warrants smaller instance sizes, but allowing you to scale out to a lot. Mm-hmm. So you can, at the moment, if you can scale up to 1,000 instances on one flex consumption app, you will hit a subscription quota limit before you get there, but we can raise that with a quick support call. And you could have one app of flex consumption scale out to 1,000 instances and back into zero, while the GPU container apps approach is where you get a huge instance size, right? And that is what you take advantage of differently. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Wow, this has been great, Tiago. Thank you so much for sharing all these details, and also giving our listeners a nice refresher on functions. It's always good to talk about that from time to time. Thanks for covering all of that. Yeah, we'd love to get some of those resources that you talked about. We'll put them along with the recording of the show when we publish the podcast. Russell, I see you. Go ahead. I see you.
I just have one quick question. Right near the start, you mentioned that the Flex plan has support for scale and networking, but we've not really talked about networking. What is the capability that it's got?
Right. Yeah, that is basically the number one requested feature that we had for functions, to have a consumption-based plan, a serverless plan that supports networking features. So that's what we addressed with Flex consumption. And it's pretty much the same features that we had in the premium plan or app service plan, where you can do inbound private endpoints, outbound VNet integration into a VNet so that you can reach those assets. So you can either lock the function to be called only from inside the VNet, or have the function be able to reach things that are inside the VNet.
Fantastic. I think that's what's been missing for a lot of customers. Yeah. So yeah, that's great to hear that.
That's really good point. Yeah. Thank you.
That reminds me, there's a GitHub issue that I need to close finally after a few years.
Only a few years.
Yeah. So I need to go there and finally.
It's probably your own issue that you raised 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
all right. All right, Diego. Well, thanks again for coming on and for sharing all your insights.
This was great.
Yeah, thanks, Diego.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on LinkedIn. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.